Most of you have heard the infamous story of Chris Watts. It's the tale of a man in his 30s who was married with two children and was considered to be living the American dream. Unfortunately, Chris would find himself in the arms of another woman, and instead of filing for divorce to his current wife, he would take her life and the lives of his two children as well. But before all of this took place, an almost identical crime would be committed by a man named Christopher Coleman in the year 2009. Christopher Coleman was raised in a Christian family, and his parents were the pastors of the Grace Church in Chester, Illinois. He grew up in a fairly normal home and would join the Marines as a dog handler, where he would train canines to conduct searches for the location of bombs. During a special canine training seminar, Chris would meet Sherry, and soon they would be married and have two sons.
Now, at some point, did he become an employee of Joyce Meyer's ministry?
Yes, he did.
And about when was that?
Probably about 1998.
Okay. So, and through 2009, he was with you about 11 years, is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
What kind of employee was he? What was his responsibilities there?
He was in the security department.
Was he in general security? Did he move up through the ranks? What happened with that?
If I remember correctly, he started in general security, and then he became the supervisor of that department. And then when a personal security person that I had left our employ, we offered Chris that job, and he took it.
Life seemed great for the Coleman family. Chris worked as a bodyguard for the famous televangelist Joyce Myers, making over $100,000 a year. Joyce had been a longtime friend of the family and had allowed Chris to manage her security department, which he did very well. Chris loved his job, and it was very rare for him to miss a day of work. From the outside looking in, the Coleman family seemed to be living the American dream, but soon, Chris would meet a woman named Tara, and his life would be changed forever.
What did he do during the conferences?
Just made sure that everything was safe for me in the crowds, you know, when people wanted to talk to me, that it was okay, you know, that was somebody that was okay. We have pretty large crowds, and so it was mainly just for our safety and to make sure that everything went right.
Televangelists like Joyce Myers will spread the teachings of the Bible to the world, and there are people who do not agree with what they hear and become very offended. Sometimes, a televangelist will receive threatening phone calls or emails from these same people who do not agree with what they are doing. Chris would tell police and family members that he received similar threats from email messages. These emails would say things like, "Tell Joyce to stop preaching or your family will die, and I will kill them in their sleep." Chris received multiple emails and even one handwritten letter in his mailbox that all carried these threats. The police took these threats seriously, and after Chris filed a police report, they would add extra patrol cars near the Coleman home. It wasn't long after Chris filed the police report that his wife and two children would be found dead.
Did you ever become aware of any threats that this defendant said he had received against himself or his family?
Yes, he told me about some.
The defendant personally told you that?
Yes.
What did he tell you? What threats did he report?
He told me that he had gotten an email threatening his family if he did not stop working for me. And then he told me that somebody started putting these threats in his mailbox, at which point I think he became more concerned about them since that meant somebody knew where he lived. He told me that they had taken the information to the police.
And you know what, for right now, I'm just going to have a seat there. I'm not sure what I want to do, but here's another water if you need it, okay? I mean, obviously, we've got an investigation to do, so I got to go over your Miranda rights, just because we're talking to you, we're talking to you.
At 6:43 in the morning on May 5th, 2009, Chris phoned the police saying that he was at the gym and he could not reach his wife at their home. He requested a welfare check. The police would enter the home and find all the family members strangled in their beds. The walls in the home would be covered with the word "punished" or the phrase "you knew this was coming," all spray painted in red. It appeared that Chris's wife had put up a fight, as she had a black eye and several scratches on her body.
I'll tell you what, from the beginning, let's just start off from when you got up this morning until the time you pull up at the house. Just kind of walk me through that first, and then we'll go through and kind of explain, talk about some different things as far as the emails you've been getting. Okay?
I set my alarm clock for 5:30, and I use my phone for my alarm clock. And I got up at 5:30, I'm in the bathroom. Put these clothes here, I got on, and drove off. I got to where I was at, but called Sherry to wake her up, get her going, and she didn't answer, of course. So I went on to the gym, to Gold's gym. Started working out. I text her at some point. I might even have called her again, I don't remember. I could probably look at my phone if you want me to.
Do you guys have a home phone number too, or just cell phones?
We just use cell phones. So I text her, and then she still didn't respond.
The police began their investigation. They found it very strange that the threats were being made against an unknown bodyguard, so they brought in extra help to investigate Chris's computer. They found that the letters were generated on his laptop and that the traced emails would come back to his IP address, which meant that he wrote the emails to himself from inside his home.
And she didn't respond. It's not like her because the kids should have been up and stuff, or getting up and going by then, I believe. And so I called her again on the way back, or when I was getting ready to leave, and she didn't respond again, and I started getting a little concerned because it's not like her not to answer the phone. Sometimes she won't answer if she's in the shower, but she always calls me back right away, and so she didn't do that at all, and so that's when I called you.
So what time did you text her back the second time?
I can tell you.
6:23, so at 6:23 a.m. is when you first texted her this morning to see if they were awake. Is that something right? Okay. Did you try to call before then? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can pull up a call up too if you want me to.
Okay, that just does text, I'm sorry. All right, so you're just looking at the text, and how are those up, Justin?
So the first one is from you. It says, hey, baby.
6:23, I'm sorry.
6:23 a.m. Okay. And then she doesn't respond to you, correct?
It would be on there.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. And so the second one from you says, I know he was tired last night. 6:23 says, I have about 5 minutes left on cardio, then I'll be home. And she never responded to any of that. Because I could tell them, I could tell them the phone.
Okay.
And then at 7:27 says, hello, you up?
Chris claims that when he left his home at 5:43 in the morning, his family was still alive. But that was not true. After examining the bodies, the medical examiner stated that the bodies had been dead for some time and placed the time of death to be around 3 a.m. This meant that when Chris left to go to the gym, his family was already dead. The other thing that the detectives noticed was that when Chris arrived home from the gym and he was told that his family was dead, he did not make a single attempt to go upstairs and see for himself. The police had been ready to restrain him, thinking that once he arrived, he would want nothing more than to go upstairs and see his family. But instead, Chris remained in the front yard with his head in his hands.
I'm sorry, 6:27. And then at the same time, 6:27, another one goes out and says, time to get the kids up. Anything as far as that sticks out in your mind from this morning when you left? Did you notice anything?
The only thing I can remember is having to slow down for the car back out of the driveway. On the left hand side, that's the only thing I remember.
You notice anything about the car?
It was just a darker color. The only thing I'm sorry, I shouldn't have been more observant.
Anything that sticks out? I mean, were you able to tell him, what kind of car it was? I mean, did you recognize it in the neighborhood at all?
No, I was just backing out of the driveway. I didn't even see it.
As they dove deeper into the life of Chris Coleman, they discovered that he had met a woman named Tara, who was a cocktail waitress in Florida. They found that Chris was obsessed with her, as he wrote things on his computer like the name of their first child together, or Tara's ring size, and many explicit photos of her. All the circumstantial evidence they have was pointing to Chris, but now they had motive.
Those kind of go back to when he first came here. Back in November last year, you were getting some of those emails sent to your work email. address, right? Do you still have those on your computer?
I can look.
Okay.
They might be on the server.
Okay. Okay.
I doubt if they're on the computer because it deletes them after so long.
Yeah, purges them out type of thing.
I would think they'd be on the server.
And how many threats like that? I mean, up until November, have you ever gotten threats like that before?
No, people have been upset with me, but I haven't gotten anything. I mean, I've had people yell at me and cuss at me and everything else, but, you know, and escort them off the property and all that stuff, you know.
What we're going to do, you know, Chris, we're gonna get past that, okay? We're gonna work this out and get through it, all right? Do you have any paint at your house?
I don't think so.
No, don't?
I don't think so.
Okay. Any spray paint?
If I do, it's old. We kind of talked about the divorce a little bit.
This last December?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went to Joyce with it, told her about it, or Danny, I can't remember which one. And they knew about it, and they suggested that we meet with somebody and see if we could work out whatever it was. And really, all it was just communication, not communicating very well.
The Coleman family looked like a loving family from photographs in their home. But friends would tell the police a different story. Text messages would be uncovered between Chris's wife and her friends. She would tell them that Chris wanted a divorce because having a family was getting in the way of his job. One particular text message read, "If something ever happens to me, Chris did it."
So,
did you meet with somebody?
Yeah, Mike Shepard, the guy that's here downstairs in the lobby. Okay. We've been meeting with him pretty regularly, and things have been going pretty awesome.
How often do you meet with him?
He travels overseas a lot too, and so as often as me and him schedule, I'd say on average maybe once a week.
We've got when you left the house this morning, was your wife alive?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. So he's
What would you say if I told you that I don't think she was?
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I think she was. And she was.
Okay.
She was laying right beside me.
Right. And I'm not doubting that. I'm not doubting that you were there, and I'm not doubting that you care. But I am doubting that she was alive when you left this morning.
Similar to Chris Watts, Christopher Coleman is a terrible liar and does not do well under pressure. The detectives waste no time accusing him of the crime because all the evidence they have leads directly to Chris. They would even find a red spray paint can and a pair of gloves on the side of the road between Chris's house and the gym he went to that morning.
What we have are different ways to tell how long a person's been deceased. That was done. And what do you think that showed?
I don't know. I guess the time frame when I was gone.
No, you guessed wrong. Chris, we need to get this resolved, okay? You can't argue with physical evidence.
Right? I'm not trying to argue with it.
All right. What I'm telling you is there is no other explanation. There's no other reason that the information we have would support what you're telling us. That it can't. It can't. You've told us a story, and we've gone over it numerous times. Right. You know what? We walk out to Justin. Maybe... we missed this. Let's go in and talk to him about this and just make sure that we're not missing something. Let's give him every opportunity to tell us exactly what happened and maybe we're missing something. Right. So that's why we go out and we come back in and we go out and we come back in. Right. I did have to use the restroom. That was legitimate. But we go out and we come back in. And we felt very comfortable that we had given you every opportunity to tell us something that was going to contradict the information that we had. All right, we've got this information, you're saying it, and we're giving you an opportunity to give us something contrary to what you told us before, so that, okay, yeah, all right, that would make sense. That hasn't happened.
They accuse Chris of committing the crime, and unfortunately for him, he is like a deer in headlights when he realizes that his plan did not work. If an innocent person was sitting in that same chair, being accused of taking the life of the person they love, they would not act the way Chris acts in the footage you're about to see. Chris can do nothing but shed fake tears and say that his wife was alive when he left.
Listen, man. She wasn't alive when you left.
She was alive. She was laying right beside me.
Listen to me. Listen to me. We can go back and forth with this all day long, but the physical evidence doesn't lie. She was not alive when you left this morning. The children weren't alive when you left this morning.
Yes, they were.
No, come on, Chris. We gotta get over this. Now, there's reasons, and that's the point we're at. I want to hear the reasons. Now is when we need to find out what happened, man. It's so important. You're at a great point to be able to help us to try to figure this out. We already know what happened. We need to know why it happened.
You do know
what to tell us.
No, I don't.
Come on, Chris. She was not alive when you left. The children were not alive when you left. You know that's true, and I know that's true.
No, it's...
We need to clear this up now. We need to clear it up now. Did something happen? What happened? What was going on in your life, Chris? Because I can't buy what you're saying. The physical evidence does not lie, Chris. It does not. She was not alive when you left, period. The physical evidence does not lie, man.
What do you want me to tell you?
How did we get to this point? That's what I need to know.
The detective uses several basic interrogation tactics. First, he puts himself in Chris's personal space to try and intimidate him and make him feel uncomfortable. Second, he continues talking without stopping, trying his best not to give Chris a chance to think up another lie. And lastly, they tell him that all the evidence leads to him and that there is zero doubt that he committed this crime. These three tactics together will leave Chris helpless, and all he can do is confess or stop talking and ask for a lawyer.
I need to know how and why we got to the point we're at right now. We both know you're not telling me the truth. We both know that. I've done this a long time. I'm looking in your eyes, and I can tell you you're not being truthful, Chris. We need an answer. We need our answers. As bad as this sounds, as bad as this looks, or you may think it looks, we understand, and I've talked to many people who have given me reasons, and it's like, you know what? Okay, all right, I can understand how somebody might have been feeling that at that time. And maybe they acted on it, and they shouldn't have, and they regret it. There's no way to turn clocks back. You can't turn clocks back. You understand that, don't you? You can't turn the clock back. The only thing we can do is go forward from this point, and we need to know what and why it happened. Come on, Chris, help me out with this.
I'm telling you, I've already told you. I've told everybody. I told the guy in the ambulance. I told you. I told him.
The more we go back like this, the more it makes me think that there maybe isn't a good explanation for it. I mean, we need to know what happened. We can't keep going on this. It didn't, you know, she was alive when I left. We know that's not true, and there's nothing we can do about changing that. If we know she wasn't alive when you left this morning, there's got to be an explanation. Now is the time to tell us. Now is the time to get this out in the open.
I don't know what else to tell you.
Yes, you do. Yes,
no.
You do. You have to tell me the truth, Chris.
I'm telling you the truth.
Were you involved in her death?
No.
Okay. Was someone you know involved in her death?
I don't know.
Did you know, did you talk to anybody about arranging her death?
No, absolutely not.
The interrogation ends without a confession. Christopher Coleman was arrested and charged for his crimes. Prosecution states that the reason Chris committed the crime was because he feared losing his job working for Joyce Myers due to a divorce. Chris claims that a mystery man hacked his computer and wrote the emails, but in the end, the jury found him guilty. Chris received 3 life sentences without the possibility of parole. To this day, he claims he is innocent, and he was even interviewed while he was in prison.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually my relationship with my wife at the time of the murders was actually good. You know, it hurts me to say that I did, like so many other men do, fall into a different relationship and made some wrong choices with all of that.
Dells.
I had 2 laptops. I, of course, didn't travel with both of them. The Dell laptop was used by my wife. It was left at the office. It was left in my car. Then it would make sense that they would be... That's the only opportunity that somebody had access to my laptop. See a person on the camera with a hooded sweatshirt putting something in the mailbox, but you couldn't identify who it was because of the hooded sweatshirt. I believe, and I have no doubt whatsoever, it is the person that matches the unknown fingerprints and the unknown footprints and the unknown DNA at the crime scene.